Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. This is Mike Harbath with Revenue Rocket, broadcasting today from my home office in Prior Lake, Minnesota. We also have my partner, Ryan Barnett, on today. Ryan, welcome.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, so today we are going to be talking about Q4 and kind of what we see happening in Q4. 2020. We're broadcasting today in September of 2020 and sort of looking into our crystal ball about what to expect in the IT services market, both sort of for strategy moves and optimization. A lot of our clients do strategy planning for 2021 and Q4, as well as sort of the M&A markets and what we're seeing so far. Ryan, what do you see in your crystal ball for Q4?
Well, I mean, in order to look back, to look forward in the crystal ball, I think I have to look back at this year, in which it's been a year like unlike no other. So if we look at what our business did, Q1 was really doing well. We saw a lot of deals transacting. Kind of Q2 hit the brakes, except for the people that really thought, hey, I've got a really strong balance sheet. Maybe I can go acquire a company that doesn't have the resources to stand things like a global pandemic for as long as it did. So Q2 kind of hit the brakes, except for people who got really opportunistic, and we saw people, at least in our business, pick up on the buy side. However, you know, Q3 really came in, and it was a bit of a back and forth market. We saw ups and downs. People really started to get back to work, and some of the premises of picking up a company with a bad balance sheet really didn't turn into fruition of buying a cheap asset. Instead, some of those deals were really kind of hard to come by because, well, frankly, IT services companies did pretty well. So I guess, Mike, I'd love to get your opinion. You know, if we look at what really happened in Q2 and 3 on getting deals done, at least from a buyer's perspective, and were there fire sales out there for sale that the buyers could pick up on?
Yeah, we certainly did not see fire sales for sure, Ryan. I think we expected to see some. I mean, certainly, as you mentioned, Q2, we had some deals get delayed or retraded, as we use a term, that were under LOI and got renegotiated, or deals that ultimately got pushed out. But certainly starting in June, there was a rising tide of opportunity. Companies did better than they expected. They actually fared better than they expected in Q2. IT services companies as a sector, and I'd say our clients overall experienced that. And it's back to certainly business as usual with heightened demand for their businesses in Q3. It certainly had the M&A market bounce back very quickly and robustly. And we see the market being as good as ever, indications are right now. So the second half of 2020, I think when the numbers are reported for overall sector health and M&A volume, they'll be back to, I suspect, where they were in 2019 in the second half, if not better.
Yeah, do you think that companies are really just companies in IT services companies or market are simply trying to make up lost ground that pause button hit? So is Q4 really going to come back and we're going to be sprinting because we had some lulls in transactions?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, there is a game of catch up. I think when you look at end user customers' investments in IT services in general, some of that was fueled by PPP money, we think. I've talked to a lot of our clients about that, and they've seen a lot of projects and clients moving on working with them based on the fact that they have some extra cash to spend. And certainly that has buoyed their businesses in Q3. However, I think because of that, as well as, you know, other needs that these companies, kind of what we'll call end user companies, have had, it's certainly helping companies achieve and exceed their H1 targets. Our initial indications are they're doing that. And I think that gives buyers and sellers comfort to enter into transactions. I mean, we've certainly been signing a record number of letters of intent in Q3 that will translate to closed transactions in the coming months. And I think that's just because there's a level of consistency and comfort with how their businesses are performing. If you're a seller, you certainly want to sell when your business is growing and performing well. And at the same time, if you're a buyer, you want to be buying a company that's also accelerating in their performance so that you can, you know, capitalize on that growth.
Sure. Do you think some of this is just a logistical change as well, or at least a mindset in getting deals done virtually? I mean, now that we've had almost 6 months of kind of virtual meetings, has M&A kind of caught up from that traditional face-to-face boardroom type meeting to almost everything virtual to help get deals started and due diligence started?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think the answer is yes. I mean, you know, we know from our own business that, you know, doing M&A remotely is a much more frictionless or lower friction process. You're able to move a lot quicker. You're able to get things done much more efficiently than if you were sort of doing it, you know, the old way. And, you know, we've talked about this for a long time. We've operated this way for, you know, a long while. I mean, at least 15 years. We know that to be the case because it's certainly been evidenced in our own business and our own level of, deal making and velocity. But I think more broadly, the market is coming around to that and has come around to that. And because of that, there's just a lot more efficiency in moving deals forward. There isn't substantive delays associated with having to schedule meetings or travel or putting due diligence teams on site that may be elsewhere in another part of the country. The traditional method of doing M&A, could drag a long while, could drag months and months logistically from the time a letter of intent was signed until close. We've seen them take 6 months or more, where without the limitations, removing those barriers, if you will, it just makes it for a much faster process. And I think that's going to be evidenced in the number of transactions and the volume that gets done.
Sure. Now, do you think that we're going to start to see a lot of rent being added back and companies going from a physical brick and mortar infrastructure to a virtual one? We've seen it at least in a number of our clients in which either they've gone to a work from home model and that's what went from, hey, I will never work with for example, in the call center space, I'll never work with a company that has a work from home model to, I absolutely need a company that has a work from home model. So kind of curious, do you think that IT services companies that have embraced that remote workers, are we going to start to see a change in how they view their physical infrastructure? And is that going to change deals as soon as this quarter?
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen companies that were making some of those moves as early as late last year in our sort of customer base. And we see more of them rationalizing space. And I think as they rationalize space, if you're a seller, you're certainly going to be able to buoy your profit, your EBITDA, right? And whether that's positioned as add backs that would occur in negotiating or a buyer negotiating a lease down or away post-deal, or whether it's just, you know, going to translate into people rationalizing space and making it much more of a office hoteling environment or no environment. I mean, we certainly have very successful IT services companies that, you know, today operate completely virtually because the tools and are robust enough to help them and have them do that. Now, you know, the business in general is pretty, a well-run IT services business in general has good cash flow, is pretty profitable. You take out hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of rent in some cases annually It does really good things for profit. And so I think that's going to drive valuations, I suspect, both in the short and long term. But it's also going to make it easier for companies to acquire these businesses and implement them across, across their customer base.
Sure. Is there any, we also have an election year coming up in this year, and it's been in such a precarious year. Do you think the elections and where we're sitting now have already been factored into people's decisions? Or do you think there'll be a large, if there's whoever sits in the White House, do you think that, what kind of impact will that have, at least on the acquisition side of the business?
Well, I think it's always hard to predict the future. We try to do it within our domain, but when you start to look at the impact of the election, it's harder to do that. I think that, technology in general is a huge part of the economy. You could argue it's, if not the largest, one of the largest segments of the economy today. It's certainly north of 30% of the U.S. economy. And, I've seen numbers as high as 36 or 38%. So depending on who you talk to, I think if that market is doing well, then it should keep doing well. Regardless of the election. I think more broadly, however, depending on what happens with tax policy, there's a huge number of technology companies that are, small businesses or entrepreneurs that run IT services companies, many, like our clients. A lot of people focus and pointing to, the FANG stocks or large tech companies, but that's rarefied air vis-a-vis the average size of a tech company in the U.S. Most of them are small. And if we start to have tax policy that is anti-business or becomes less business friendly, particularly less small business friendly, I think things could change pretty quickly, certainly. Hard to say. I don't think in the short term there's going to be a dramatic impact. I think a lot will depend on, sort of what happens in 2021, and certainly warrants it, staying close and watching. So
Sure. Is there, so just switching gears here a little bit, what things should IT services companies be looking at for the rest of this year? I mean, and what advice can you give them from a strategic standpoint? And a financial standpoint, so not necessarily in the views of M&A, but in general, just simply running the business. We've had such a tumultuous year. What are the two or three things that you can really focus in on that can help out, just round out this year?
Well, certainly, I think many businesses learned to be much more lean through Q2. We saw some, and I wouldn't just say a few, we've seen many businesses increase profitability through Q2 by making appropriate staff and infrastructure changes, like rent changes and those kinds of things that have benefited them. I would encourage companies to take this time to fortify their balance sheet, to make sure that they're reducing debt or paying off debt, and that their reserves are, that they're keeping some cash around. We don't know what 21 is going to bring. So I think, being conservative while the tide is high will help you weather any scenarios that might occur when the tide goes out. And so, fortifying the business, if you will, I think would always be a good strategy. But beyond that, don't ignore growth and investing in growth and your growth strategy in general. As people know, we're big proponents of verticalization. There's quite a bit of information on our YouTube channel and our website about that information, about how to focus the business around specializing around a particular set of technologies, verticalizing and focusing on a vertical market, and then, making your offerings, your services easy to buy through what we call productization of those services. And thinking about how you could implement those strategies either on your own or you know, with a firm's help like ours, would be, you know, something that would make some sense to invest in as you continue to, you know, optimize your growth strategy. We think that, you know, with the changing market, remote nature of the market, and ultimately the opportunity that continues to be presented through COVID, that aligning your business to be number one or number two in the market you choose to serve is always a good idea. And the best way to do that is through optimizing your strategy.
Sure. Now we're in September here. And so we got September, October, November, December left in the year. Do you think that's enough time to get deals done? And what advice can you give to firms that are mid-process and have perhaps found a target? What kind of things can they do to accelerate a deal to really punch out Q4?
Yeah, there's certainly plenty of time to get deals done. I think the key is making sure that, you know, you have a good process map to get the transaction over the finish line. You know, we often quote this statistic that, you know, folks that are rolling their own deal without an advisor, there's a pretty low chance you're going to get that deal done. It's about a 1% chance. And we found that to be the case when we engage with clients who've tried to, you know, go down the M&A path on their own or just with their accountant and their lawyer. Not that those guys don't play a great and significant role in an M&A transaction, but you really need an M&A advisor whose job is to shepherd all of the tasks that are needed in the right order to get the transaction done. And so, you know, our advice would be to certainly make sure you have a good process map, make sure you engage an advisor to assist, and certainly, you know, get going, get moving. It's important to, you know, time is of the essence, I think, in any of these transactions. We often say that time kind of kills all deals. There's a lot of deals that are smoldering or people have had preliminary conversations, but because of individual executives' involvement in the business, it's difficult for them to move the deals along, or they don't know how to structure deals, or you know, they just don't know how to manage that process, or even don't have a process. And you know, it's the business case for why you should engage someone to assist, because it's a significant lift. And they're very challenging to get done. It's called the most unnatural act in business for a reason. That's not something you do regularly in managing and growing your business. And we think if you're serious about getting deals done and getting them done with the least amount of friction, that you should bring an advisor to the table to assist you.
Sure. Well, just to round this this podcast out, Mike, what's the one piece of advice that you'd give any company in IT services to finish out this year?
You know, a couple things. Make sure you're marketing and selling like a rock star. Mm-hmm. Everything starts with a sale. I think it's critically important that, you know, business owners get that right, because that's going to help carry you through the best of times and, most importantly, the worst of times. And not all of our brethren in the IT services industries get that right. And so I think there's opportunities to improve that. You should be looking hard at how do you optimize that function in the business and get that right. And then I think beyond that, really pay attention to the contribution margin or profitability of the business as it relates to fortifying your balance sheet. You know, if you focus just on those two things between now and the end of the year, I'm confident that 21 will be a great year for you.
Sure. Sounds great. I appreciate the time and the insights here today, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. With that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week in September 2020. Tune in next week for next week's podcast. Thanks a lot and take care.